As we know in boxing, everything changes to the fly. So many things of the aspect of the sport, you can't really, put your finger on. Some things in boxing can be completely confusing. So rather than sit around and guess about the game, what we decided to bring on is a good friend of mine, Ernesto De Toro, who has many hats in the boxing game. He's been involved with the sport for, two decades now, Ernesto? He's been a manager, promoter, even sometimes a publicist to a matchmaker. He's worked with pretty much everybody in the fight game from Golden Boy, Matchroom, to PBC. I would like to introduce you a good friend of mine who I've known for a very long time and has helped me through the road of learning this game that we love called boxing. Ernesto Del Toro, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
How you guys doing? There it is. There's the audience there giving you a clap for there, Ernie. I know you're a busy guy, man, so I want to thank you first off for coming through and speaking to us. You're up in Philly for the Enes Boots fight. You got a fighter in the horse race game here, which we'll talk about a little later and stuff. But let's get down to some topics in boxing that I'm interested in speaking on, and I know my co-host G-Funky's interested about talking about. A big name in the game who's been suspended and is pretty nearly off suspension, coming close to being off suspension, is Ryan Garcia, who if I'm correct, you've had a personal relationship in the past with, right?
Well, I haven't had a personal relationship with him. I had a very good relationship. Well, I think I still do. You know, we talk off and on with his former manager, Roger.
Roger, right. Right. So let me ask you this. As a manager who's been pushing management, we're talking about this a little earlier off the air. You were saying, like, look, we manage fighters, but sometimes we're kind of pushed to being promoters, wearing that promoter hat. And you've been in that position, numerous times.
Right.
Do you think that with Ryan Garcia's comeback fight, man, is there interest in seeing a rematch with Devin Haney because of all the controversialness behind that fight? Or is this something that we need to move on and pass because the boat is finally sailed off?
Man, that's an interesting question, D, because you know what? Ryan in itself, he's created a whole different world for him, if you will. You know, as far as like, his popularity,
right?
The performance that he had against Haney was impeccable. You know, everybody thought he was crazy and he was gonna just go down. And honestly, I thought he was gonna go down because, just the way he was acting and his demeanor and whatnot, before the fight. But
his local tactics is what had everybody worried. Let's be honest, right?
Yeah. And but what's crazy is that, he dominated Haney so easily, and people were thinking that Haney was gonna just run over him,
Right.
And look with the outcome. You really do have to question, where Haney is at this point. I've been hearing about different opponents that they're throwing at him for his comeback fight, but I honestly feel like he should just kind of take it easy on his comeback, just to kind of get things back into place.
And, you think it's more him hyping himself up to call out the names like Teofimo Lopez? Because we've seen this in the past, man. I mean, G-Funky, correct me if I'm wrong here. We've seen this in the past. The guy has got a lot of Twitter fingers behind the X application, but doesn't always translate into a real fight. I mean, am I wrong here? Is this something that he's just probably like pushing a narrative to see if there's a reaction? Is there like a market there to tap into? Or could this be the real deal where this kid wants to test himself to be great?
I agree with you. No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, I was gonna say
Yeah, I
what's
was gonna say.
interesting for me is that, Haney's done good for himself, obviously. He's where he's at because, he's talented.
Absolutely.
But what I've and I hate to say this, but I don't mean to knock on anybody because that's just not my style. But I think Haney's been confused so long just with the presence of his father, and I don't mean it in a bad way.
Gotta agree with you.
I think that Billy's a good guy. I know him. I've met him personally. I've worked with him, but I think it's time for Haney to just kind of move on from his dad. And I think they've decided to do that. I got a good friend of mine, Mickey Bay, who's going to be training him now. So I think Mickey Bay's got what it takes to change Haney around. So it's going to be interesting to see that.
That's interesting to even hear because I've interviewed Mickey Bay in the past when he got in trouble with PEDs. So he's familiar with that kind of accusation. I believe he was cleared. I'd have to go back because we're talking about 2014, maybe 2015 when that happened when he was signed with the money team.
Right.
I agree with you about Bill Haney, and I know my co-host agrees with you about that as well. Is because we talked about this, me and you, G. We talked about how sometimes the decision of a father can cloud your judgment. We just saw that this past weekend with Floyd, with his dad, and him yelling at his son after getting rocked for a full minute, like you mentioned to me off the air, a full minute of yelling at his kid with no instructions, right? I mean, do you agree with
Yeah.
Ernie? The boat needs to sail with leaving Bill Haney behind?
Yeah, I do think that. And, as much shit as I give Bill online and on my channel, I have to give him credit for his what he's done managing his son's career. He's gotten him some really big paydays and that's terrific. That's a manager's job, As far as the training and stuff goes, in my opinion, I haven't seen a whole lot of progression from when Haney kind of first busted out on the scene to where he's at now when he fought Ryan Garcia, and then we saw what happened there. I do think that having someone steer the ship that's more in depth with the X's and O's in the gym than Bill Haney, I think that's a fantastic move if that's going to happen for Devin Haney. And I also agree with Ernesto about maybe bringing him back and with a soft touch after such a rough fight. There's some controversy about another fighter. I'm sure we'll talk about that here later about the matchmaking with another fighter recently. So
Tim Tszyu. There we
yeah.
go. Yeah, no, I mean, why not even dive into that now? Ernesto, we got you on for one reason, not one reason, but many reasons. But one of the major reasons why we wanted you on is because, like I said, you're a guy that's put on the boots to walk through the mud of this sport called boxing, and you've gotten dirty a few times by doing this. More than one occasion, this has happened to you. Walk us through this, man, this whole managing a fighter. At what point do you allow a fighter to dictate his career, to make the decisions that he believes are the healthiest decisions to make? Because I don't know about you, and I don't know about everybody else, but I know me and Giafunke have started to notice this trend where fighters are starting to make decisions for themselves, not knowing if this is the right path to take into their fight career. And every time they take it hasn't had that turnout that they've been hoping for. So again, let me ask you, when do you allow a fighter to make these decisions on their own? And when do you step aside and go, all right, man, you know more than me. I've been in the business for what, 2, 3 decades, but you know more than me since you're the fighter.
You know what, D man? I think it becomes like a fictitious crossroads, if you will. You know, like you could never get, you can never let your fighter dictate what is best for him, because they really don't know. And you know, the fighters that have done it, I mean, who has succeeded? I mean, I'm sure there's a couple of them, but really, can you name a few?
It's really tough. I mean, we had a good friend of ours on just a little while ago named Lukey, and we brought up Canelo when he decided to pick Bivol. I mean, he was very strategic when he did the 168 unification, campaign run, and it was great. He did phenomenal, but when he decided to jump up and wait, the Bivol thing, well, it didn't turn out so good. Crawford just recently didn't turn out so good, you know? That's just to name a few and stuff. So, I mean, what do you tell a fighter, Ernie, when they say, look, this is the guy I want, this is the guy that I should get, you know? And I mean, even like right now, we're talking about Ryan Garcia. He wanted Tank Davis. He's telling, and his tactics were crazy, the way he got his fight with Oscar De La Hoya on Golden Boy. You know, he blurted out his business over Twitter. He allowed everybody in social media to know their business, that he was unhappy with his promoter because his promoter wasn't moving at the pace that he was looking for. So, like, what do you say to a guy like that? Do you just let him run his course and hope he doesn't run into a wall? Or do you put your hands up in the air, Ernesto, as a manager, and go, you know what? Maybe I'm not your guy.
You know what, D? I'm going to give you two examples of what's going on here. So, you know, if you look at Ryan Garcia and Oscar De La Hoya, you know, they've always bumped heads, and that's, you know, that's not a secret. But you know, in Oscar's point of view, when he looks at the decisions that Ryan wants to make, I mean, it's kind of like a no-brainer for him to just let him do what he wants to do, because he's going to generate money regardless, and you know that for a fact.
That's true. You know? Let me ask you this. Is he a hostage to Ryan Garcia's stardom right now? Is Oscar a hostage to Ryan Garcia's stardom?
I believe he is. I believe he is, because, you know, whatever Ryan does, it's going to go viral. He's going to get the attention. And, you know, at the end of the day, D, even if Ryan is suspended and he decides to go, you know, sell apples in the fucking corner of the street, he's going to get, you know, the attention. He's going to sell the apples. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I would like to say that he is hostage to what he does, but it's also profitable. And, you know, I wouldn't mind being in that situation, you know, but let me give you another situation.
Go ahead.
Saracho, the kid that we're fighting here on Saturday, you know, he's a really good kid. He follows the order, but he doesn't like to train the way my partner Ray and us try to, you know, to tell him what's best for him. He always wants to train the way he wants to train, and we always have a difficult time with the weight. There's always a weight issue. Right now, to be honest with you, I just got to the hotel. I've talked to him on the phone. We've had good conversations. He's telling me he's on weight. I haven't checked his weight because I want to believe him. I don't want to be, right. I don't want to pressure him, especially because this is basically the biggest fight of his life to date. But, you know, he's lost three titles on the scale already. And, you know, that's because we already got to the point where, you know, we're fed up. And I don't say it in a bad way. It's just like, if it's going to be his way or, you know, my partner Ray, he's already invested so much money into him. He's basically a hostage to what the kid's going to do. And, right. You know, he's talented, but we feel that he can be so, so much talented, but you know, so there's a lot of people in his being.
Let's just clarify it. He's a hostage to his ways because Ray's put so much money that he's got to find some type of return, right? He's either looking to either make out or break even. That's what you mean by being a hostage to what this kid's doing at this moment, right?
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, D, because really what manager isn't at that point, you know, at that level? You right. know, you're 12, 15 fights in, you know, you're already at least $50,000 in. So you have to keep going. You can't just, you know, you can't just walk away. It's just not, you know, it doesn't make any business sense to do that.
How often are you guys in this position, man? Let me ask you that. And I'll let G jump in because I'm taking up most of the airtime right now with my mind spinning. But how often are you in that position where a fighter, you either are pushing them to go in the gym, making weight, or even showing up, or not knowing whether or not he's either going to show up to fight or he's on his fight game? How often are you pushed against the wall as a manager / promoter at times?
You know what, D? It's more often than not, you know, and it's not just the weight issue. You know, we have another fighter that we signed, you know, really good kid, very technical, has, you know, bright future. But this kid is always, you know, in need of, you know, the presence of his dad or the presence of his family. He's very emotional, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot of different issues that always take place. And, you know, sometimes it's crazy because, you know, you invest so much money into a specific fighter.
Right.
And then you come across another fighter who's like so hungry and, you know, wanting to succeed and doesn't have the means to do it. And you just kind of like, you know, you want to just kind of kick yourself. You're like, dude, like, I should have invested my money into this kid, you know?
Right.
You know, I was 1 week away, D, from signing Pitbull Cruz.
Wow.
And I didn't sign him because of the same reasons. You know, I'm overwhelmed with the fighters that we got. We got events, you know, we do events in Mexico every 6 weeks. So when people come up to you and say, hey, you know what, I know of a fighter of this, but you know, you're dealing well with all these other fighters and their issues, that you just kind of like put it aside and not knowing exactly what you know, what's out there. And unfortunately, we were 1 week late with Pitbull Cruz.
Wow.
So go figure.
That's crazy. Damn it. And I know there's quite a few stories like that you have told me of other fighters that you were close to signing even did sign, but it just didn't pan out. Go ahead, G.
Yeah, no, this is all great information, especially for fans out there that think they have a hold of this thing called boxing and the business side of it. What we see a lot with fans is they demand fights right away from, you know, young prospects that, you know, aren't ready. They're not even a really big ticket seller anywhere in any kind of market anywhere here in the U.S. But I wanted to ask you this, with that being said, explain to the fans that are going to watch this how much time, money, and effort it takes to try to build a ticket seller either in their region or anywhere else out there, because fans often think that it's such an easy thing to do when from everything I've been told, it's very difficult to do.
That's a good question.
You know, I'm gonna tell you, and you know, I hope I don't get emotional here, but you know, I'm serious, man. You know, look, I was married for 26 years, my friend. And, you know, I recently got a divorce, and I kind of dwell on that because, you know, it's 26 years of my life that I basically just said, okay, I let go. And it's all because of boxing. I put together so much time into boxing. I put so much effort, and, you know, to go through the roller coaster in terms of my relationship with my family, you know, it's a bitter taste. You know, it's a difficult path to take. And, you know, when you're doing it, when you're signing fighters and you're putting your heart and soul into your passion, you kind of, don't put attention to, to what's more important, which is family, for me, I'm over it. I've had the conversations with my kids. We've patched things out. Everything's okay. But, it's so difficult, man. You put your heart and soul into this, and, it's just like a coin flip, It's very hard. It's very, very hard.
Is it addictive? Is it addictive, Ernie? Is it an addiction that you can't explain?
Well, I'm gonna answer you this. I'm gonna answer with this, D. 2 years ago, I promised myself that not 2 years ago, about 6 years ago, I promised myself that I was not gonna invest any more money into boxing because it just basically took my finances to hell. And that's when, I talked to my partner Ray. We decided to start up the promotional company. And I was very upfront with Ray, very honest with him. I told him, look, Ray, I don't have the means to continue to do this anymore. I will look for talent. I will bring talent to the table, but I cannot afford to put any more money into this, And I promised myself that I would never start working with a fighter coming, out of the amateurs. And what happens? 4 months ago, we signed one of the top prospects, amateur prospects from Phoenix, Arizona. His name's King David Garcia. He basically broke loose the feeling that I had of not, restarting the whole, going into a startup situation with a fighter. But, we've signed him. We have him 2-0 already. He's 15 years old, and he's a very, very good talent, which I think, you guys are going to be hearing a lot from him, about him, rather, in the near future. He's a very good talent. So, is it addictive? I think it is.
As long as I've known you, man, we've known each other for quite some time, man. I've been to, at the time you had a ranch, I met your wife and your kids. And every time we come across each other, you'll either hit me up or I'll hit you up. And it's always out of the blue. Like, it's something's coming up and we always kept in touch with each other. And it's always linked back to boxing. But as long as I've known you, I've always said like, hey, how are things going in the boxing world? And you've always said, I think I'm done, D. I've had it. I'm fed up with the sport. Then like 2-3 months pass, I'll hit you up again or you hit me up. And then you go, I got this other guy. you got to check him out. This is it, And the reason why I say it's an addiction because I think anybody that's in love with this sport knows that the reward of this sport is very, very slim. And if it's slim for a fight fan, meaning for like myself, a person that tunes in practically every fight, I'm a boxing zombie that's waiting for that one moment of our Super Bowl or World Series or Game 7, I gotta think here that it probably drives you even more nuts because it's like one in a billion that you get that one moment of signing a fighter that's gonna make is gonna break what all that sweat and tears that you've been putting in, right?
Yes, it's exactly right, D. And what's funny is that look. We've known each other for so long, D. You know that I've been so close, to getting a title, a champion, right. And it's never seemed to happen. And you know what? I'm kind of past that now. I kind of enjoy a lot, D. The fact that a fighter will call me who's who's been done for like the last 3-4 years, who's inactive and. He calls me and talks to me and he trusts that I can do something for him. And then you go ahead and we do it, and it's so gratifying. You know, it just kind of keeps you in place. You know, it erases all the bad feelings, you know, in a heartbeat. And right. I think you know who I'm talking about, you know, with the Axeman.
Right.
You know, he was offered to me by a good friend of mine, Gabriel, and we put together a plan, and sure enough, we got him a title.
The Axeman, which I'm trying to remember his full name right now. I just went, I'm blank. What's his full name?
Nicholas Walters.
Nicholas Walters, the Axeman. Yep. Yeah.
You know, stories like, it's stories like that that kind of keep me, you know, placed and brings that passion back, you know, that I had when I first started. But I mean, there's just so many stories, D, you know, right now, my main focus is to, make sure that, you know, that little kid that we signed, that 15-year-old, I'm hoping that we, you know, we can bring him to greatness. And in doing so, it's crazy, David, because, I've been fighting him in León, Guanajuato, and, dude, there's so much talent over there. It's insane, man. The fights over there, dude, TV fights galore. And it seems like every freaking event, I got to sign a new fighter that I see. So I'm having a lot of fun right now.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes when I get back home and, you know, I'm alone and I kind of put things in perspective, you know, I just kind of, you know, I ask myself the same questions. Do you know, am I addicted to this crap or what the hell? And
it's a dream. I can't remember who told me this. I know it was another manager one time. I went down a spot. Oh, the name will come to me in a minute here, because it was in Sacramento. I believe it was Ray Woods, the father of Diego Corrales. I know some folks would say stepfather, but he was more of a father to the kid. I believe he told me boxing is a dream and a nightmare all in one.
When you're beginning in the game, D, mm-hmm. you know, you tell everybody that it's good, that it's awesome. And, you know, for me, it was my passion. But then once my passion turned into a job, it wasn't really that cool anymore.
Right.
But we're here now, you know, and I gotta basically stick to what, you know, what I've committed to. And again, you know, I'm committed to three other fighters that we signed as well. So, you know, I'm hoping one of these guys has to take me to the top, D. It's been too many years. 20 years is too long to not be, you know, to not be involved with a champion.
And you've always been at that grasp, man, that grasp. I wonder though, Ernie, like, will there ever be a point where you say, you know what, so many sacrifices and so little rewards, what was it all for? And it's time for me to close the book. It was a great chapter in my life, but I got to open up a new one. Or is this one of those things where one more shot, and then I'll quit?
No, you know what's crazy, D, is that I kind of look back, you know, and say, okay, well, you know, I threw down the gutter, you know, 26 years of matrimony, and you know, I can't just walk away and just say, you know, I actually let that go for boxing, you know? Yeah. But now I kind of recreated myself and, you know, my girlfriend, well, my wife, you know, she lives with me, but she, you know, she comes with me to the fights. We'll look at the fights and, you know, I kind of try and get her a little bit involved so that, you know, we spend time together.
Right.
I try to travel with her as much as I can. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun, D, you know? My kids are okay. You know, like I said, we talk things out, we put everything on the table, and you know, we're happy. So I'm happy at this point, you know. So to answer your question, I don't think that day's gonna come anymore because I think I've already let all of the bad stuff aside, and I've convinced myself that we live today, tomorrow, we don't know if we're gonna be here. So
Right.
I just kind of live
Yeah.
day by day, and I try to enjoy what I do, and then just have fun and just roll with that, D. I've committed to myself not to let this business stress me out, because at the end of the day, if I walk away, I think I've made my mark, at least with myself,
Right. Definitely. T-Funk?
Yeah, no, that's a commitment for sure, man. We look forward to seeing your guy this Saturday over there on the big Matchroom card. But I want to ask you something about matchmaking. There's been some controversy over the last couple of weeks with Tim Tszyu in his fight with Murtazaliyev, I believe is how you say it. But I wanted to get your opinion on this. Sergio Mora took to social media and said that it was bad matchmaking is what got Tim Tszyu that night. I agree with him. I know that there's a lot of people that don't because they claim they want to see the best fighting the best, and matchmaking is what is destroying boxing right now. But in your opinion, in your decades in this business, what do you think of Sergio Moro's take? Do you agree with him or do you disagree, and why?
I don't know if I'm gonna agree with him, and only because I don't know if you guys know, but Tim Tszyu, all of his sparring was with one of our kids, Emiliano Moreno. I don't know if you've heard of him,
I've heard of him,
but
yeah.
he was he did all of the preparation for this last fight. And in some of the conversations that I was having with Emiliano's father, is that Emiliano was getting a better part of him during sparring, and which was unusual, because I had seen him spar before the Fundora fight. And that in itself was, to me, a bad decision in taking that fight, and I think that fight took a lot from him. And I think he just basically, I think he took his opponent lightly this time around. And it's not so much the matchmaking. I think just, I
You
don't
think
think his team took
you
the time.
go ahead. No, finish with your thought right there. Go ahead. You don't think his team what?
I don't think his team took the time to, to look closer at the opponent, and I don't think they took the time needed to, to have accepted the Fundora fight. That kid's tall, awkward. I don't know. I personally would not have taken the Fundora fight first and foremost, and then the result from that. I think I just would have waited and kind of maybe gotten like a little tune-up fight, before taking this fight. But I don't know, D. I mean, Tim Tszyu's the highest paid athlete down in Australia. He's got a lot of pressure too, from his fans and the type of opposition he's facing. That's just my opinion, but I don't think it's so much the matchmaking, man. I just think it was just the, I personally think that he beats this guy in a rematch. But taking a better approach, I think he didn't take the right approach to the fight. But again, that's just my opinion.
You want to weigh on that, G-Funk, and I'll come right behind you.
I agree. Should have been a tune-up after the Fundora fight. That was a tough fight on both guys. More Tszyu, obviously, with the big cut that he suffered earlier in that fight. Also feel like the corner probably should have pulled the plug on that fight before it became an actual contest according to the rules, you know. I feel like that should have been done as well, but what are you going to do? That's boxing. You know, you guys were talking about Ryan a little bit earlier. I don't know if you guys... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
No, I said, you know, when I didn't really watch the fight with Fundora, but I was told what took place. And I think you're right. I think they had a shot to just stop the fight and they would have called it a no contest, which I think, you know, they should have done. Why they didn't do it, I have no idea. But, you know, just things just kind of went downhill for Zhu, you know, after that.
And I think panic mode set in for Tim Zhu and his team. And I agree with you about the whole team situation overlooking Tim's opposition here. My question was, he got a bad cut. I truly believe they went in with this game plan as if the Fundora fight was a fluke, and they wanted to prove that it was a fluke. So in order to get that Ortiz fight, the Virgil Ortiz fight, they had to blow through this guy, and they wanted to blow it in great fashion. Now, listen, I'm a huge I love Tim Zhu. I think the kid has got a very high IQ in boxing. I think he has the complete package in terms of a kid that has a father who's a living legend. We've seen this. Kids that normally come from a household of a father trying to live up to their father's shadow, they don't live up to it. This kid, I thought, has the potential to live up to his dad's stature of fame, right? But I think...
Yes. But you know what? Let me tell you something, D. Again, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion. And my opinion is that, you know, at this moment, at this time in his career, I mean, how careful can you be with his matchmaking? You really can't. He's already an elite fighter, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, how do I explain it? You know, it's like there is no more easy fights for this guy.
No, I agree with you on that one, Eddie. But how about this? As a manager, you're managing the kid. He comes off of a beating and in panic mode with Fundora with a big cut, right? Do you put him in immediately with a puncher? Or do you put him in with a guy that's not as maybe volume punching he has, but not knockout power? I mean, like you just mentioned, this is something they didn't see, or they oversighted it and they didn't pay attention to it. I think that's my deal with that is like, how does your team fumble like that?
You know what, D? For me, if I had, you know, if Tim Zhu was my fighter, you know, I don't know how much money they've made in their career at this point in time. I would like to think that they've done well. But, you know, for me, I got to look at the business part of the deal, you know?
Right.
And, you know, for me, I want my fighter to fight as many fights as possible between now and, you know, the time he retires. Every time he fights out is, you know, it's a financial gain for me, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, for me, you know, I don't want to sound crazy here, but, you know, forget the fan. I need to take care of my fighter. I need to take care of, you know, my
investment,
right?
Right.
I'm just being real, you know, but here's the thing. You know, again, from what I understand, Tim Zhu's the highest paid athlete in Australia. So why not take care of him? Why not take him through those easy fights? As long as you possibly look at Canelo. We don't got to go very far. A lot of people, you know, I get into so many arguments with Canelo, you know, Canelo was marketed very well. He was brought up, you know, so good.
Right.
And then he became great. His discipline made him a great fighter, you know?
Right.
But has he faced the best opposition? Hell no. You know, he had, and when he did, they were already washed up. I don't care what people say. You know, he has never faced, you know,
I forgot to tell this to G Funky, man. He may, gee, I think my boy Ernie has topped you out of being the biggest Canelo hater of all time, because God, G's been holding that title for some time, Ernie. He's been holding the Canelo hating hat and shirt for the longest time.
I hate Canelo as a fighter, and I'm not ashamed to say it, you know.
Cabrón. I hate him
with all my heart. But you know what? You gotta give credit where credit's due. You know, the dude's done, you know, very well for himself. On a personal note, you know, I admire the kid because, you know, he's well done. He's done well with his investments. And, you know, he's taking advantage of the position that he's in. And why not, you know?
I mean,
do the same thing.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here. We just talked about Tim Tszyu and his team making a poor decision in how they're moving their kid. Canelo's team, bro, have done very well until the Bivol point. And some would say Laura, some would say the Gennady Golovkin first fight. But, I mean, if you look at strategically, he's made some pretty big financial and good moves. Unifying 168, like you said, you got to give the guy dues where dues are have to be given. And that's one of the big ones in the bag. But let me ask you this, Ernie. How does his legacy, how does it end? If he doesn't fight a Benavides, does he need Benavides at this point to end his legacy, or does he still walk away riding into the sunset as one of the great Mexican fighters?
I'm so happy you asked that question, D. here it is, man.
Give it to me.
And this is what's so interesting, and it's just reality at this point, D. Look.
Grab the tissues. Canelo, grab the tissues, G Funky. Grab the tissues. Go ahead.
Canelo has done so well for himself. You know, his financial position is so great that it allows him to, you know, basically do whatever he wants to do. But
right,
I feel that it's gonna kind of backfire, if you will, with him, because since he knows he's able to do whatever the hell he wants, he's avoiding not fighting Benavides for $200 million, dude. $200 million, that's ridiculous.
Has that been offered yet, though?
But beyond,
has anybody offered that, though?
I mean, I don't think so. You know, $200 million is a lot of damn money, you know, but I think 150 is doable, D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really do, especially with Turkey, you know, being involved.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I think Canelo is at a point where, you know, $150 million may not be a lot for him, and he's okay with not getting that money and not getting his ass kicked, right? And it's crazy because my thought is, if he just fights Benavides, whether he wins or loses, he seals his stamp on a legacy. And if he does not fight him, I feel that he's going to be remembered for not fighting that guy. And, you know, he's not going to be looked at the same. That's just an opinion.
The standard for us Mexicanos is very high when it comes to our fighters. I agree with you, but then I don't agree with you. G-Funky, the hater of all haters of Canelo, wearing the Canelo hat, weigh on this, man. Tell me, do you agree with this? Does it hurt his legacy not fighting David Benavides Jr.?
You know, it very well could, man. It's hard to, you know, kind of predict and project the future, you know, of what these guys can do. Benavides certainly has the looks of someone who's going to have a pretty solid run before his career is over. So potentially, if Canelo fights him and possibly beats him, which a lot of people think is possible, that could be down the line. It could be a fight like, man, he fought him at the end of his career and he actually beat him, and then look what Benavidez became. Yeah, that could be a big part to Canelo's future legacy. But like you said, Dave, the rich history of Mexican boxing and the guys who we all have at the top, you know, there's that certain group of guys that are at the top of that list. One of them, what was my favorite fighter when I was growing up was Chavez Sr. And, you know, at this point in his career, he was fighting the young guys. He fought a young